Texas is WBUR.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Today in France, you can't catch a train or a domestic flight or buy today's paper off a newsstand. You can't do business at the post office or the phone company, the bank or the hospital because France is on strike. It happens. This is day 10 of a strike that would be unheard of in the United States, the land of 60-hour work weeks, drive-through lunches, and cheese spelled with a Z. The divide between France and America has always been thus, and during the best of times it amounts to little more than transatlantic teasing. But since France and America fell out over the war in Iraq, relations, some say, have hit bottom. A lead editorial in today's online edition of Le Monde newspaper outlines all the reasons why France and America just don't see eye to eye. They might have democracy and market economics in common, the French Daily says, but where those similarities end, the trouble begins. Take multilateralism in diplomatic affairs for America. That's an option for the French, an imperative. And when it comes to questions of immigration, social welfare, defense spending, and capital punishment, the gap is gaping. Well, Connection listeners, do you agree? Are the philosophical differences between France and America driving the two countries apart? And how much do the good ties between the two nations still matter? 1-800-423-8255 is the number to call, 1-800-423-TALK. And we'll be considering these questions and taking your phone calls this hour with my guest, the French ambassador to the United States, Jean-David Levite. Ambassador Levite, welcome to The Connection.
Good morning, Dick, and thank you for the invitation.
Tell me what you think of what Le Monde is saying this morning. They're saying as well that this political talk of shared values between France and America is really just that, so much talk that the United States and Europe are, and France are slipping apart when it comes to moral and cultural, political values. These are very dire pronouncements.
No, I don't think so, Dick. I think that we share the same values. We are two democracies. We implement market economy. But at the same time, in my view, there are two main differences. The first one is the question of terrorism. Of course, we are side by side in this war against Islamist terror. But you are really at war. I was in my office in New York as the French ambassador to the UN when there was 9/11. And I saw the destruction of the Twin Towers from my office. So I feel like an American on this issue. And I understand fully that America is really at war. For French people, for most European people, it is a slightly different perspective. It is a kind of low-intensity war. And so that's the first difference between the Europeans globally and the Americans.
Are you saying that's a mistake on the European perspective, that they ought to see more of what America saw? Or are you just saying that these are the two different ways the two different people react to the terrorism in the world today?
Well, I would say that the huge shock that the American people suffered, worse than Pearl Harbor, is difficult to understand when you are on the other side of the Atlantic, because people saw that on their TV screens like a film. We are also victims of Islamist terror. We had 11 French people killed by Al-Qaeda in Karachi. We had three French killed in Casablanca a few days ago. But I would say it's a low-intensity war. And the huge shock of 9/11 is a bit abstract for most Europeans. That's the first difference. In my view, the second difference is the question of sovereignty. After centuries of wars in Europe, we have decided, thank God, to build a common future through shared sovereignty, that is, the European Union. And the best example of shared sovereignty is the euro. Now 300 million Europeans have in their pockets the euro. It is shared sovereignty. And to share sovereignty is our way of life. We do it on a daily basis, not in the United States.
What are Americans missing about that shared sovereignty? Are you saying this is the difference between a multilateral and a unilateral world?
Yes, exactly. When we think about the problem of today's world, as Europeans, we think multilateral because we have this in our blood now after 50 years of building the European Union. Shared sovereignty is a way of life in Europe. And when we think global, we think multilateral. Here in the United States, in my view, sovereignty is something that you want to protect against outside interferences. And so when you think of global problems like environment, how to protect it, or like SARS, or like and so on, you don't think naturally of multilateral institutions, the UN, WHO for diseases, and so on and so forth. And that's a key difference, in my view, between Europe and the United States.
Well, let's go back to where we began then with our discussion of shared values, because if this is a gap that does need to be bridged, and your job is making sure that it is, if the gap needs to be bridged, we look at the closing statement from the G8 meeting in Evian, France, just hours ago, and there's your president, Monsieur Chirac, saying that a war that doesn't come with multilateral backing is illegal. That's just one more knife in the side of the disagreement over Iraq. There's nobody at the senior level who seems to be working to try and repair these relations.
Well, I disagree with your pessimistic view about the situation. Of course, we had a strong disagreement about the war in Iraq. We considered that this war was not necessary, that the UN inspectors could have continued to do their job. They were doing a fine job, in our view, as in the view of a majority of the members of the Security Council, or I would say the international community. But that is past. The war is over. And now we have all the same interest to rebuild Iraq together and to succeed in building democracy in Iraq. Because if you fail, if we fail, it will be a disaster for the relations between the Islam world and Western world.
I do want to go back, though, to this morning's editorial in Le Monde, which I think it would probably be fair to characterize as similar to an editorial in the New York Times in this country. That's the paper of record in France, fair enough?
Yes.
And the writer says, you know, even on the very word freedom, where there ought to be these shared values, the disagreements outnumber the agreements. Freedom of whom? Under what conditions? She goes on to write, must one start a war in order to free a people from the clutches of a dictator? I'm not sure that I'm the only one here who's being pessimistic.
Well, I'm a born optimistic, and I think our two presidents had yesterday a very useful, constructive conversation about the Middle East and what we have to do together to bring peace to the Middle East, the Palestinian and the Israelis, but also Syria, Lebanon and Israel. And we will work together to, if possible, achieve that goal. We discussed also Iran and North Korea. No disagreement on this issue. We discussed also the need to do more to help Africa. No disagreement on this issue. And on AIDS and on SARS, I don't see any disagreement. So we may have different histories and cultures, and we may have nuances on the way to promote democracy and freedom, but these are nuances, and basically I see us, you and us, on the same side.
Well, you take it issue by issue, and each issue is, you can find disagreement, but it's where you began the conversation by outlining the differences, where the Europeans would say it must be done with a multilateral, multipolar approach.
Yes.
And the United States is saying that's not necessary. We've seen that in the disagreement over Kyoto, over the International Criminal Court, over all the other thorns that predated the war in Iraq, when the fundamental approach to dealing with global problems is so different, then these issues are always going to crop up as irritants, are they not?
irritant is a good word because it's on the surface. And I would say for the U.S., and I say that as the former French ambassador to the United Nations, I would say it's multilateralism à la carte. You pick and choose. When it fits with your priorities, then you are in favor of the use of multilateral instruments, most of the time, the UN Security Council. And when you feel it's more comfortable to pick and choose a coalition of the willing, then you use that way. We react more systematically in favor of the use of multilateral instruments because we think it's better to have a global coalition more than a limited coalition. And that's what we did together in Afghanistan, for instance. I was the president of the Security Council during the month of September 2001. In 1 hour, we adopted a resolution to support unanimously the United States, and it paved the way to your war in Afghanistan. But we were not only with you as France, but the whole world was with you in this war in Afghanistan, and we had 5,000 troops in Afghanistan side by side with your troops.
Mr. Ambassador, I do want to ask you about the letter that you wrote to the administration and sent to journalists 2.5 weeks ago. This was a letter that in which you pointed out, and I'll use your words here, about the disinformation campaign aimed at sullying France's image and misleading the public. Now, you know diplomacy better than I do, but we talked to a couple of ambassadors who said, you know, that was a very, very unusual thing for Jean-David Lévy to do, to send that letter. Did you see it that way, as an unusual move?
Yes, it is certainly an unusual move because there was an unusual situation. Time and again, we saw in some papers accusations which were really lies about France. For instance, we were accused of giving Saddam Hussein and his government passports at the very moment the regime was crumbling during the war. And obviously, this is not true. But to see it in a paper and then on TV networks without our denials simply considered on the TV networks, it's very damaging for the image of France. It fuels anti-French feeling in the United States, and it fuels also anti-Americanism in France, because all this is in the French press, and people don't understand why we are accused in such a way. We are not perfect, far from that, but please, if you accuse us, at least accuse us of things which are true, not disinformation.
All right, Connection listeners, my guest this hour is the French ambassador to the United States, Jean-David Lévy. We're speaking about the state of relations between France and the United States and whether or not there are philosophical differences between the two countries, which are even larger than the latest irritants we talk about and read about in the press. And we'll talk more about that unusual letter when we come back. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. We invite you to join us. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. President Bush says he and Arab leaders made progress during their recent summit in Egypt on the U.S.-backed roadmap to peace
and make a bid for the news.
I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. A couple of weeks ago, members of Congress, the president, major media outlets all got a copy of a letter from the French ambassador in Washington under the signature of Jean-David Lévy. And it said, "Our friendship is a treasure. It must be protected. We should not let bitterness between two staunch allies distract us from the fight against terrorism." The letter also said, though, that some members of the American media have issued false accusations against France. They spread false information, and they all rely on information from anonymous administration officials. My guest this hour is the ambassador, Jean-David Lévy. He's in a studio in Washington. And, Ambassador, I'm wondering, in writing that letter, was it specifically to criticize the journalists who wrote what they wrote, or were you also aiming your criticism in part at those anonymous administration officials?
No, my problem was the anonymous officials, because of course the journalists do their work, and when they get information, or so-called information, they publish it. And of course, the problem was elsewhere, that is, the sources of these informations. And I have a rule of a game. When you are in a hole, the first thing to do is stop digging. And I had a conversation with Colin Powell about the relations between the US and France, and we agreed to stop digging. And I think that in France, there was absolutely no criticism of American policy, even if we disagreed about the war, which could be considered as false accusations. In this country, it was slightly different. Now, after the letter, I think that it has stopped. And I'm delighted, and I hope it will continue, because, of course, we may disagree as friends and allies, but in a respectful way.
Now, you have almost 30 years in the Foreign Service, perhaps more than 30 years. I'm not sure. I was just looking at a copy of your biography. So you have developed a very thick skin in that time. I would suspect that a number of people would have said to you, Ambassador, don't write that letter. You'll look desperate. You'll look frightened. The best thing to do is simply ignore all that and move on.
Well, when the reputation of France is at stake, my skin is very thin. And I would add that, as I said in my letter, our friendship is something serious. It's 225 years old. We were side by side during your war of independence. You saved us twice last century. And I'd like to say that on the eve of D-Day, which is the 6th of June this week, we will never forget. You saved us twice, and we will never forget. And so this deeply rooted friendship, yes, must be protected. And when it is attacked in a rather vicious way, my role is to defend it. Let's disagree on substance, the war in Iraq, but in a respectful way, like we should do it between two democracies.
So tell me if what you're saying is that you believe this deeply rooted friendship may be at risk as a result of recent disagreements and recent writing in the American media.
I think so, yes. If this kind of French bashing campaign were to continue, I think our friendship could be slowly destroyed, simply because I visit a number of states and cities. I went to Boston, but I went also to Houston, to Atlanta, to Miami, to Chicago, and everywhere I saw people asking questions about why. Why have you given passports to Saddam Hussein? Why are you keeping a stock of smallpox and so on? And I said, but all this is simply lies. These are lies. And people said, but why these lies? And this is why I took this unusual initiative. But, you know, it's one letter. Now I think this campaign has stopped, thank God. And let's turn to the future. Let's think positive. Let's see what we do together, which is far more important than the limited number of issues on which we disagree.
I'd like to do that, and I'd like to do that with our callers. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. First to Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Jim's joining us. Hello, Jim.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you for calling.
Oh, I'm very sad my wife can't be listening to this. It's this also concerns the letter and friendship that the ambassador was speaking of. We have a relationship, and I'll try to make this quick, that goes back 20 years with a French family that lives just north of Paris. About 20 years ago, Jean-Claude found my wife's father's name carved in a tree. He carved it in the forest of Compiègne in 1944. We've since gone to visit these people six times, and they've come to the United States to visit us, and it's a great relationship. But recently we received a packet with an American flag in it that we had given them, $2 bills that we had given them, and a letter saying that he really wanted to cleanse himself of all American ties. It was a very, very sad letter. The last phrase said, in French, Bartoli's gift now stands as only a perch for seagulls. And then he ended it with the phrase, "That is all," not later or goodbye, but "That is all," or "It is over." And, you know, this is a blue-collar family that we are very close to. And this is not the media, this is not a politician, but this is a typical French family. And their friendship now, we're questioning as to whether it's lost entirely. And it just breaks our hearts in a way. It makes us a little angry, but it also is very sad. And I just hope that our friendship with the French is not going to be destroyed by this.
Mr. Ambassador, this is precisely the sort of anti-Americanism and anti-French on this side of the Atlantic that you were talking about.
Yes, and I'm as distressed as you are, because, as I said, this friendship is a treasure. It must be protected, it must be preserved, it must be enhanced. And at the same time, let's consider where we are. We live in a dangerous world. We are confronted with the same threats, the spread of arms of mass destruction, the need to fight together, terrorism, and so on and so forth. So we have real common interests. Maybe we differ on some issues, but most of the time, we really agree. And we are side by side on most issues. And this should be considered as the most important. And this is why when I address French audiences, I pass the same message. Mm-hmm. That is, let's think of our American friends, what they did for us. They saved us twice. Let's not forget that. And let's consider that on most issues, we agree.
Jim, give us a quick reflection, if you can, of what you hear in Winston-Salem just from your friends. Do you hear the same kind of...
No, we really don't. You know, our friends really do not have anything negative to say about the French. But what the ambassador is saying, it mirrors exactly. Jean-Claude goes out to this tree where my father-in-law carved his name in 1944. He goes out to this tree periodically. And in the letter he said, "I went out to the tree to thank Johnny for what he did during the war, but I also had to tell him how I felt towards the Americans now." And that, again, broke our heart again. Here he is. He's explaining that, you know, you helped save us in two wars, but now I'm turning my back on the Americans.
Jim, what I want to ask you is whether or not from your perspective, and then after you, Jim, we'll hear from the ambassador, but whether or not in your view this is a dispute between the leaders of the two countries. Is this a bad bit of blood between Jacques Chirac and George Bush, or is this something between the French people and the American people?
Well, I think it started as a dispute between Chirac and Bush, and the media got into it. I mean, the letter referenced an article of the New York Times where they called the French the stinking cheese-eating monkeys. But now it seems to have transcended to the people. And that I can't understand, because in the past we've always said, well, that's your country, that's my country, that's your politicians. But never has it been directed towards us. And now it seems like it is directed towards the people of America. And that, again, is what makes this whole thing very, very sad.
Mr. Ambassador, you know that leaders will often disagree and then move on with the aid of their diplomats to areas where they do agree. It does seem that what we're talking about here has reached something of a new depth.
I don't think so. It's widespread, but my hope is that it's not deep. The origin of this fever on both sides of the Atlantic is the war. We strongly opposed the war, as I said, because we felt it was not necessary. The UN inspectors were doing a proper job, and they should have continued. And that's it. And so now the war is over. And my message to both the French people and the American people is, let's turn this bitter page, because what is between us is so important, our friendship is so important, that we cannot accept to see it slowly destroyed. And frankly, I don't agree with those who say it is destroyed. Mm-hmm. I think it is not. I think that if you visit France, and I invite all of you to visit France this summer, you will see that the French people is really a friend of the American people and will always remain so. So we may disagree on some issues, but in France, deeply rooted, you will see friendship for the American people.
Last question, Jim. Have you written back to Jean-Claude? Do you still plan to visit?
We plan to write back, and it's something that's very difficult, and we do plan to visit. We would like to go this fall. But let me say again, the ambassador's words right there actually are bringing tears to my eyes, because I do hope that Americans and the French can come back together, as I hope that we can come back as friends with our friends over there. So thank you very much.
Thanks for your call, Jim. 1-800-423-8255 to join us now to Greensboro, North Carolina. Tyree's on the line. Hi, Tyree.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Ambassador.
Good morning.
I first want to say that personally, I completely agree with the French position on the war. I completely agree that it was not necessary at this particular juncture. But my problem was I felt like the French motive might have not have been, you know, the opposition to the war so much as France has made no qualms that they wanted to make the European Union a counterbalance to the United States' power. And I was just wondering why that was.
So you're saying that the motives of the French in opposing the war were not necessarily, in your mind, Tyree, pure?
Yes.
Mr. Ambassador?
I think it's a very important question, and I'm delighted to address it. In this dangerous world, France doesn't consider that there is too much American power, military might, on this side of the Atlantic. Our problem is that there is not enough European military capacities. When we had the war in Bosnia or in Kosovo, we discovered, and it was distressing news for all of us in Europe, that we couldn't solve these little problems next door to our borders without the aid, the support of the American military power. And we had to do a lot to convince President Clinton at that time to accept to participate in these wars in Bosnia and in Kosovo with the Brits and the French and few others. And so what we have to do is to do better in military terms in Europe, to build a more integrated military capacity within the context of the Atlantic Alliance, of NATO. But we don't spend enough for our military in Europe. We have decided in France to do more. We are working with the British and the Germans and few others to do more, integrate better our military. That's what we want to do. But we don't want to build a counterbalance. Look, and I'll conclude on that. We have built over the years an integrated economic market, a unified market. And now we have the euro. So we have built over the years, I would say, a kind of economic power which exists. Is it a threat for the United States? Not at all. It is a wonderful partner. And if you are the CEO of an American company and you want to invest in Europe, it's much better now because you have one unified market, €1 as the only currency, and that's a success story, which is of great benefit for the Europeans, but also for the Americans.
There are all those parallels that you list, the economic parallels between the EU and America, the political parallels, the financial parallels, and you put your finger on the one that proved divisive over the past couple of months, and that is the fact that there is not a military parallel, but the consensus perhaps not a consensus, but one of the criticisms that you heard in this country in the run-up to the war was that until the French and the Germans and the members of the European Union get their own military house in order, that to sit in Europe and make pronouncements about how America ought to use its military power was a little bit presumptuous.
Yes and no. Each country is in charge of the security of its own people, and we respect the decision of President Bush. Ultimately, he's the one to decide about the security of the American people. Now, with Iraq, we didn't see an imminent threat. because we didn't see any link between Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein, and we didn't see an imminent threat of the use of arms of mass destruction. That's why we opposed the war. But we have no judgment to pass on the decision of President Bush. We had different views. That's it. Now, about the use of force, we always say that it should remain the last resort to solve a problem. And we fully agreed, for instance, in Afghanistan, it was obvious you had to act, and we were with you. And most of the time, we share the same approach. We are not a pacifist country. We are working hard with African partners to rebuild peace in Côte d'Ivoire now. We are side by side, as I said, in Afghanistan, and President Chirac just informed President Bush yesterday that we will deploy a greater number of special forces in Afghanistan to help you, because the war is not over in Afghanistan. So you see, we are not shy about the use of force. We simply say it must be according the international law. We must respect international law, and that's not exactly what happened in the Security Council a few weeks ago.
And what you're saying, though, is that the war in Iraq has European nations, Germany and France in particular, thinking about spending more money on defense to have a greater say when an incident like this were to come up again.
Yes.
Connection listeners, our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. My guest this hour is the French ambassador to the United States, Jean-David Levitt. He's in a Washington studio. He is there to answer your questions and mine. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. What about the philosophical differences that exist between France and America? Are those low-level, continuing, ordinary differences between countries, or have these been highlighted by the recent disagreements over the war in Iraq? And how much do the ties between these two nations matter to you? 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by Perennial Designs of Needham, creating custom silk and dried floral arrangements to celebrate every day, also offering a selection of garden in 287.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. My guest this hour, His Excellency Jean-David Levitt, France's ambassador to the United States. And we're taking your calls about relations between the two countries. We're going to go straight to Arlington, Massachusetts. Teresa's on the line. Hi, Teresa.
Hi, Dick.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. Good morning, Ambassador.
Good morning, Teresa.
I have two comments. The first is that I'm a history buff, and everyone always mentions what we did for the French and two world wars. And what I would like to say is thank you to the French for what they did when we were fighting for our independence from Great Britain. Because without their help, diplomatic, financial, and otherwise, we would not be the United States of America. And I think that Americans have a tendency to forget our history. And that's what I wanted to say, was thank you to the French. And secondly, I would like to say that regardless of what the polls in the United States say, I have a big disagreement with the polls. I totally respect France's sovereignty. And if you disagree with us, vive la défense is what I have to say. So thank you. Thank you.
All right, Teresa, thanks for your call. Do you hear in your travels around the country, Mr. Ambassador, do you hear the sort of sentiments that Teresa is expressing?
Yes. Well, America is the greatest democracy on earth. And there is a debate in the United States. And we have received a number of letters, emails, calls of encouragement, as well as disagreement, insults from time to time. And that's democracy, and that's the debate. And I thank you, Teresa, for your comments. And I think that your comments show what we have in common. That is, everything. We have different histories, but we were most of the time, nearly almost of the time, together. In a way, France is the only big country with which the United States has never been at war in Europe.
1-800-423-8255. Teresa, thanks for that. Next to Boston, and Eric's joining us. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Dick. Thanks for having me on. And good morning, Mr. Ambassador.
Good morning.
My question really is two parts. The first part is, it seems to me that the American people, if there's one thing you can say, is that they're very they're straight-talking and they like direct answers to direct questions. And it strikes me, and I mean this with no disrespect to you personally, but it strikes me as somewhat disingenuous that the French are now pointing to 200 years of relationships between our two countries, when in fact isn't it really true that what they're really fearing right now is an economic reprisal, is a boycott of French goods and so forth because of the war, and that they're just very, very nervous that this is going to have a dramatic impact on the French economy. I mean, you can point to 200 years of great relations, but the fact is that in recent years, France's absolutely horrendous record in terms of anti-Semitism and other aspects of their culture have gone basically against the same.
You're widening it a little bit, making it a little bit difficult, Eric, to know what it is that you're looking for a response to. So if I can take the economic side of it and ask the ambassador to respond to that really what this is about is fear that France is going to be punished for its opposition to the United States, economically punished.
Well, first, I'd say that I'm also personally an adept of straight talking, and that's why I send my letter. Second, economic reprisals cannot exist anymore because our economies are intertwined. I can give you many examples. For instance, the Evian water that some of you may drink is distributed in the United States by Coca-Cola. So if you don't drink Evian water, well, you may create problem for American jobs in the United States in the Coca-Cola company, and so on and so forth. Second, the European economies, as I said, are integrated. When you fly with an Airbus, you may think, well, we will punish the French and we will not buy any more Airbus. But don't forget that Airbus planes are built, yes, by France and Germany, but also by the UK and Spain. So you cannot punish this or that country without punishing the other countries in Europe. And so, more globally, the transatlantic economy is fully integrated. Europe has created in the United States 4 million jobs, and France only 650,000 jobs in the United States through the investments of the French companies. And each day, as we speak, you have $3 billion of goods, services, investments which are crossing the Atlantic both ways. So the very idea of a boycott, be it in the United States or in France, with American products, doesn't make sense. And I say to my compatriots, if you boycott a McDonald's restaurant in Paris, don't forget that you put in danger French jobs, because those who are working in a McDonald's restaurant in France are French.
So how is it that the French hear the Secretary of State Colin Powell when he's asked, in a straight-talking question, will there be any repercussions, any reprisals? And he says, in effect, yes, there will.
Well, so far, I saw only one disinvitation by the Pentagon for one military exercise, and that's it. And for the French wines, there was a little movement downward, but it's already stopped and it's picking up. So you see, I don't think that economic consequences, or even more globally, consequences or reprisal, are tools which can be used. And frankly, if when we disagree, we start destroying each other, then what is the rule between great and grown-up democracies? If each time we disagree, we start this kind of game of reprisals, it's a disaster.
All right, Eric, thank you for your call to Pittsboro, North Carolina now. Wendy's joining us. Hi, Wendy.
Hi. Thank
you for having me.
Mm-hmm.
I was calling kind of in response to the gentleman from Winston-Salem and something. We, my husband and I run a business where we sell French products, and our name has the word French in it, and my husband is French. And so we hear, we talk about the subject every day. And what we're hearing in this country is people saying, oh, I can't buy something French. They don't like us anymore. And they say it with a lot of sadness and a lot of misunderstanding. Then when we talk with our family in France, we're hearing, well, the Americans don't like us anymore. And it all seems to be very media-driven. And we are hearing certain things in this country. And, for example, of one of the news stories that was that really hurt the French people that was broadcast there was a report about a U.S. government study of the cost that it would, how much it would cost to repatriate the bodies of the World War I and World War II soldiers. That just cut to the bone. And it seems like in both countries, it's an issue of, well, they don't like us, so we can't like them.
And Wendy, I wonder if you're in business, I wonder if you remember back to the early 1990s when there was all this anti-Japanese sentiment in the United States. Buy American, the Japanese are killing our car industry and buying up our entertainment industry. Do you remember that?
Well, at that time, I was actually living in France.
Okay. Well, the reason I bring it up is I'm just wondering whether or not, in your view, looking at the long term, do you see this as something which has long-term repercussions or something which the two countries, you know, have enough history that they'll get over?
Well, quite frankly, I think that the American people have a very short memory. I don't see this as something that's going to be lasting. Actually, in our business, we had family in France saying, don't you need to change your name? You need to change your name. You can't be called, you know, French Connections. And we said, no. And we had people coming into our store kind of just to make sure that we were okay. You know, they wanted to make sure that this was not really affecting us. They were hearing about what was happening, you know, through the news, through mm-hmm. the media. They wanted to make sure that we were not being personally impacted by it. So
you're saying this will pass?
I think it will pass.
Ambassador, do you agree?
Well, yes, and that's my hope, obviously, and the sooner the better, because in this dangerous world, we have better things to do than to exchange bitter words. And I heard what Wendy said about they don't like us anymore, and I think that's the mood, but only the mood. It's not deep-rooted, and my hope is that in the coming weeks, through the kind of nice conversation our two presidents had yesterday, or the fact that a French Concorde will be given to the Air Museum in Washington in a few days' time, and so on and so forth, this kind of friendly gesture, the mood will change, and we'll see only a friendship between our two people.
Do you think, Wendy, thanks for your call. It was nice to have you on the program. I'm wondering, Ambassador, whether or not you are looking at your desk in the morning and wondering whether or not a grander gesture isn't required. And I don't mean necessarily on behalf of a nation, but on behalf of one of the leaders, whether or not it comes from President Chirac or Bush, that gesture which wasn't necessarily made so publicly at the meeting this week in Evian. People more interested in reading the frostiness than the warmth there. Does one of those men have to take the lead here?
Well, what they did yesterday, in my view, is very important, because they have decided to recognize that they had a great difference of views and opinions on the war in Iraq, but that's past. And they have decided to turn this bitter page and to focus on what they have to do together to rebuild Iraq, to fight against terrorism, to fight against the spread of arms of mass destruction, to work together also to bring peace to the Middle East, to help Africa to fight AIDS, and so on and so forth. And they had a wonderful conversation focusing on the future and our cooperation.
So, in the end, when we look at whatever damage may have been done to relations between the United States and France, do you see any kind of silver lining here in that the two nations may speak more frankly to each other, that as a result of the scratches and the blood over the past 6 to 8 months? Or is it more important to move quickly past that, pretend it didn't happen?
Or we cannot say it didn't happen. And it is important to recognize that we had this difference, And it is a big difference because, in a way, it is about the international order. Is it possible to launch a preemptive war? If some starts, what do we think about the precedent which has been established and so on? So it is a big problem. And we must quietly discuss about how we want together to build the world order for the 21st century. That is a key issue. But we should do it in a quiet way, during a relaxed weekend, maybe, between advisors and then maybe, if time permits, between the main leaders. But at the same time, we must act, because there are urgent matters.
You don't think these very same philosophical differences will come straight back to the headlines if North Korea becomes a point of contention at the UN or Syria or other parts of the world that are being talked about now?
No, I don't think so, precisely because on North Korea, on Iran, on the Middle East peace process, we have exactly the same views, the same approach, and we wholeheartedly support the initiative taken by President Bush to meet the leaders of Israel and the Palestinian people to try to move forward the peace process. So we have not always disagreement. On the contrary, most of the time, we do agree.
Mr. Ambassador, I want to thank you for taking time out of your day to spend it with us at The Connection.
Thank you very much, Dick.
Jean-David Levit is French ambassador to the United States. Connection listeners, you can continue the conversation in the forum section of our website. You can find us on the World Wide Web at theconnection.org. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
This is WBUR. Hour 2 of The Connection is coming up next at 11 o'clock. Dick Gordon will be speaking with the directors of the Boston Early Music Festival about new approaches to early music. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by ThoughtForm's Green Building Division, emphasizing environmentally sensitive and sustainable construction located in Acton and on the web at ThoughtForm.com.